For the average soldier, the trek north to Camp O'Donnell took about a week. Yet because there were so many tens of thousands of prisoners in such varying states of health and mobility, who began marching at different times from many starting places, the Japanese needed more than 3 weeks to accomplish the ungainly evacuation. The staggering logistics were surpassed only by the staggering carnage. Estimates vary wildly, but the conservative guess is that 1,000 Americans and as many as 6,000 Filipinos died from exhaustion, disease, gross neglect, or outright murder. Although most of the killings were committed in ones and twos, there was one notable mass execution in which 350 members of the Philippine 91st Army Division were herded up, tied with telephone wire, and systematically beheaded by sword. An unknown number of Americans were killed by shells fired from Corregidor, for the Japanese deliberately detained groups of prisoners to serve as screens for their artillery positions on Bataan, in the cynical hope that the Corregidor gunners would not return fire for fear of hitting fellow Americans. Corregidor did hold its fire, but not indefinitely. Prisoners along the route were given little water and fed only an occasional dollop of sticky rice the size of a baseball. For all too many men, the provisions were insufficient to keep them marching, and a man who could not march was as good as gone. Had the deaths been apportioned evenly over the entire 65-mile route, one would have encountered a corpse every 20 yards. Yet for all its horrors, the march was not a premeditated atrocity. For the most part, the brutalities occurred in a piecemeal fashion against a backdrop of escalating confusion and seething racial hatred. Miscues, bad intelligence, cultural misunderstandings, sweltering heat, and a devolution of Imperial Army discipline all conspired to create an environment of tragic drift. The Bataan Death March, as the event later came to be called by the American media, most prisoners at the time simply called it, with characteristic understatement, the hike, took place not according to plan, but rather as a result of the chaos that flourished under a plan that was fatally flawed. Once it became apparent that the original evacuation scheme was radically out of step with the circumstances on the ground, the Japanese failed to alter the plan to accommodate new facts. Their estimate of the number of prisoners was off, incredibly, by as many as 60,000 people, and their assessment of the health and stamina of the Phil-American forces was equally off base. Realizing this, the Japanese should have instantly begun a wholesale rethinking of the logistics. Arrangements would have to be made for more vehicles, more food, more hospitals. Most obvious of all, more time would be needed to complete the move. But the Japanese Army, for all its many strengths, had rarely demonstrated a talent for reversing course in midstream once an error was recognized. Steeped in a rigid Confucian-influenced culture, in which an order was considered final, and any attempt to change it impugned the wisdom of the superior who conceived and issued it, the Japanese war planners were bold in action, but often deficient in improvisational skills needed for quick and supple reaction. Instead of alerting General Homa to the new exigencies on Bataan, the planners forcibly tried to make the old provisions and timetables work. The results were catastrophic. For whatever reason, the Japanese elected not to honor General King's request that American vehicles be used to transport his men to prison camp. In truth, some of the trucks had been irreparably sabotaged by Americans who mistakenly thought they were supposed to destroy everything of potential value the day before the surrender. Many of the American vehicles were confiscated for military purposes and were later seen towing Japanese artillery pieces toward southern Bataan. The Japanese army was not heavily motorized. It remained, to a great extent, a foot army. This was partly a matter of choice and partly a matter of necessity, for Japan suffered from a desperate shortage of oil and enjoyed access to few outside sources of petroleum.